Thank you, Arthur. I'd like to credit the leadership of the gypsum community for authoring this presentation, and that'd be Arthur Allen and Mark Ryder. There's a broader group of people that have actually done all the work in developing this conservation practice standard. And these individuals are representatives from USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service, USDA Ag Research Service, land-grant universities, and we've been including Tim Taylor from Environmental Protection Agency, keeping him informed of the progress and development of this standard. We've also included a group, an international scientific community of over 70 individuals that are members of a listserv, and I want to thank all of them for their input. And even if I didn't hear from you, I consider that positive input because I know you would have spoke up if I'd done something stupid. And then we've had some financial support from American Society of Agronomy and Beneficial Reuse Management. I'll pause to credit Jerry Lemunyon, either credit or blame him, for this process of bringing all these people together to develop a conservation practice standard, because I'm not sure that's always the way it's done. But this was, I think, a real good way to achieve consensus and bring everybody together in developing this standard and bring the best science to the standard. So thanks, Jerry, for your leadership in that. And I also make an announcement that after my 15 minutes are up, we're going to have a discussion session, but it's going to be somewhat organized. We've got Dr. Wayne Honeycutt. I call him the Chief Scientist of NRCS. I don't know if that's the right title or if I just gave you a new one. Tim Taylor's going to come forward, Rufus Cheney, and we'll have Mark Ryder representing the land-grant universities and have them come forward and maybe offer just a little response to what we've presented today and then also field questions from the broader group. So I encourage you to stay for that. Okay, so starting with our first speaker, with Bill, he outlined the content of what's in a practice standard, so I'm going to talk you through that. And everybody that was in that listserv, or a member of the listserv, or a member of the community, has already received an email attachment with the current draft of the standard. But I'm going to talk you through the content. So the definition is the surface application of gypsiferous products to change the physical or chemicals properties of the soil. And note that I said gypsiferous products, not FGD gypsum. We've heard a lot about that, and that is what is driving the need for a standard at this point in time, because there's 5 to 10 million tons of FGD gypsum produced in this country every year in excess of what is used to make wallboard, which is about 5 million tons. So we've got a huge surplus of FGD gypsum. But there is a plant in Virginia that produces or makes Kevlar, the bulletproof material for bulletproof vests, and they have a byproduct of gypsum too. So we're going to set some standards for a gypsiferous product, and if you meet those standards, then it's suitable for agricultural use. And that might not be the only product that's out there, but we're trying to be general enough and not just tailor this specifically to FGD. So we have to define the conditions where the practice applies, and it's going to apply where gypsiferous products will be used to alter the physical or chemical characteristics of soil to help achieve one of several specific purposes. And I'll go through four specific purposes. You've already heard about them today anyway. However, if one of those purposes is to remediate sodic soils, we're not going to include that in this standard because there already is a standard, Standard 610, that goes through how to use gypsum to remediate sodic soils. But we just reference that in this standard. And if you're going to use, say, a non-mined gypsum, which was about your only option when 610 was developed, you should pay attention to our criteria for the quality of the product that you're going to use in remediating a sodic soil. So we just reference that. We don't repeat the information within this standard. We have general criteria that's applicable to all purposes, primarily the validation of the product. We say that it's the responsibility of the amendment provider to furnish the following documentation to the producer, which primarily is a chemical analysis of the product. It's got to include the calcium and sulfur content. It's got to include the content on heavy metals or other potential contaminants that are shown in Table 1. And it must contain an average radium-226 concentration less than 10 picocuries. That's the limit that was set by EPA for phosphogypsum. So we're going to stay within existing limits that are already established by EPA. And then we do make a statement at the end that FGD gypsum that's produced by forced oxidation wet systems after the removal of fly ash is acceptable for these uses. That's pretty much a known standard within the industry, so we just make that statement outright. You still have to provide the chemical information, but that's information that the plants have readily available anyway. This was the Table 1, and Rufus already made reference to it. On the left, probably what goes in the standard is what's on the left and what's on the right. Those are the list of elements of concern. What's on the right is what is the limits that have been determined for the use of FGD gypsum, or not, gypsiferous soil amendments. And in determining what those limits are, Rufus has already talked us through that, but I'll just point out that these are some existing data that he took into account. There's a citation on some analyses of soils of the U.S. published by USGS in 2013. There's an older publication of USDA, or associated with USDA, on farm soils in the U.S. There's what's in spent foundry sand. There's what's in FGD gypsum. There's limits that are already established for biosolid application that could be taken into consideration. And recently, Rufus has concluded a risk assessment for spent foundry sand and established limits out of that risk assessment. So those were also taken into consideration as we came up with the recommendations for the purity of the product for soil amendment. Just highlight there that, as Rufus said, they've begun a risk assessment for FGD, but that probably will not be available for several years. So this, we're jumping ahead of a full risk assessment, but we, as Rufus explained, we think we have solid grounds for these limits. The first purpose, or one of the four purposes that are defined in this standard, is to improve soil physical chemical properties to increase infiltration and reduce erosion. Now, right now we say apply 1.5 tons per acre of gypsum. That probably is the one open question within our listserv. I know that putting a specific number out there has been questioned, and we may take a different direction on that. One of our options is to turn that over to land-grant universities to make specific recommendations. And when you think about the range of soils and the characteristics, and we go back to what Miguel was talking about, some soils that might not even benefit from that, from the application of gypsum, depending on the mineralogy, that might be better left to land-grant universities. But that's open for consideration into what that rate should be for that particular purpose. But another purpose is to reduce dissolved phosphorus concentrations and surface runoff and subsurface drainage. And here we say that this is appropriate for general use on high P soils. You should apply 2 tons per acre broadcast on the surface when soil test phosphorus is greater than twice the maximum optimum level for soil production. Most of your states have recommendations on what's sufficient or what's the maximum amount of phosphorus that would be needed for a plant response. So if it's over twice that, or if you have a P index, and most states do, if it rates high or very high, then those would be the soils where you would want to apply gypsum, or where this would be an appropriate practice standard. Remember, when we get into the practice standard, we're opening the door to potential cost share. And so, USDA is not in the habit of buying fertilizer. They don't purchase your nitrogen fertilizer, so this nutrient purpose is not included as one of the four purposes that we're talking about. If you're trying to amend for calcium or sulfur content, that's considered more a fertilization issue. So that's not one of the four purposes. But for the four that we have, you have to define that there is a need for it. So this is what defines a high P soil situation. We say that's 2 tons per acre if you're just correcting a chronic high soil P condition, legacy P condition. For manure application, broadcast 1 ton per acre of gypsum within 5 days after manure application or prior to the next runoff event, whichever occurs first. That's again to get the gypsum on top of the manure, as Alan Torbert was explaining. Moving on to the next purpose. If the purpose is to mitigate subsoil aluminum toxicity, then we talk about an exchangeable aluminum below the 12-inch depth, greater than 1 milliequivalent per 100 milligrams of soil. That establishes the need for it. It's got to be that high or higher. So apply gypsum at a rate recommended by the land-grant university, or ARS. And so here, think about your own land-grant university. We're going to be putting you on the spot on some of these, and we back up to physical amendment. We may be putting you on the spot there again. So what's your reaction to us, referring the responsibility to make these rate recommendations to the land-grant universities? Reduce the potential for pathogen transport. Apply 2 tons of gypsum within 5 days after manure or biosolid application, or prior to the next runoff event after manure application, whichever occurs first. Here we're assuming that if you're trying to treat an application, we're assuming it's got some pathogens in it, and then this is the way you would prevent that pathogen loss. In the plans and specifications component of the standard, you should specify the source of the product, whether it's flue gas, mined, or some other. Explain the purpose for its use. It's got to be one of those four purposes that we define, and what the planned outcomes are going to be. You're going to reduce available phosphorus loss and runoff. Got to provide the chemical analysis of the amendment product that's going to be used. These are kind of the steps that you're giving the conservationist when they're writing the plan. You need to pay attention to this, this, and this when you're considering this standard or applying this practice under the guidelines of this standard. And then provide any soil or plant analyses that demonstrate the need, such as soil tests, phosphorus levels, et cetera, if that's what you're going after. Application methodology, include the rate, timing, sequence of application with other nutrient materials, or if there are any mixing instructions. And then whether or not there are required soil and plant analysis after application to determine the effectiveness of the amendment as appropriate. Under a section of the standard that's operation and maintenance, we have some statements that, such as do not allow livestock access to stacked gypsum, do not resume grazing until rainfall or irrigation has washed gypsum off of vegetation, and do not apply gypsum after the soil test calcium level exceeds a maximum level established again by the land-grant university. You can get some nutrient imbalance. And so even though you might be fixing something, you could be causing yourself some damage. So pay attention to a maximum level of calcium accumulation. And then we cite the references and the science behind the standard. And there you go. So,
Monday morning, the Houston, there was a gentleman from Pennsylvania that presented some data where they're using gypsum from Woolworth Reclaim as baby drill on dairy systems.
Right.
So, can you comment on that? I don't know if it seems to be that. He said there was really no issue with that other than maybe the manure pits, but I don't know if he said that calculator did not ingest.
Right. In Pennsylvania, they're using gypsum as bedding material in dairies, and the farmers have not reported any, you know, ill effects by the cattle. So maybe they're just not tempted to lick it. What is known is that if they ingest gypsum, it can have a negative effect. It can form hydrogen sulfide in the rumen. So you definitely would not want to spread gypsum on top of forage and then send them out to graze, because you're just inviting them to ingest gypsum. Whether or not they would ever lick a stack of gypsum in the corner of the field, you know, maybe that's open to consideration. Yep.
Can I explain
this? Get the microphone, Rufus. And while he's doing that, could I ask Wayne Honeycutt, Tim Taylor, Mark Ryder to come to the front of the room?
The question came up a year and a half ago. A detailed literature study found several studies, including a price system in Missouri, where a manufacturer made a feed supplement that included just 20% of the supplement. And it was available in the pasture, and it actually killed cows. And when they stop using gypsum in the product, they no longer have any cow to be killed. Brother Torbert and I did a test of adherence in the field, and we find little adherence on tall pasture of the Bermuda grass. And I was surprised by the lack of problems in the use in bay. I guess we'll learn why, but I'm still surprised. It's a horrible disease in South Africa, so
we don't want our livestock eating this. Yes.
Wait, I want to get some comments.
Yes, it is. I'm Doug Schreiber with the United States Gypsum Company. We manufacture calcium sulfate feed grade for use in livestock production, and we sell hundreds of tons of this material every year for livestock production. And I have yet to know we've killed an animal by producing calcium sulfate feed grade.
Is it mixed feed?
It is part of balanced ration that goes into a mixed feed. But we don't feed straight gypsum. But it is part of balanced ration that goes into livestock feed.
If you send me an email, if anybody wants the paper, send me an email. I'll send you this copy of this veterinary paper showing the death of cattle in Missouri.
I gather that's a different situation. Well, thank you all. I guess I would just say thanks to everyone for all your commitment to bringing this together and bringing it to the forefront. And I think it's quite amazing the level of detail and the thought that went into all this. All of you, in my opinion, would be really congratulated. It's rare. Bill, you know, Jerry, you know, NRCS is very rare for people to put so much thought and forethought and detail into bringing us an opportunity like this. I was not able to be here for all of the presentations, so they had other presentations that I had to be attending, and I was here for the kickoff and near the end, the cleanup. But I gather that there's a huge opportunity for NRCS and for the users, just particularly, you know, the environmental benefits. I think that To a large extent, we already have what we need with our nutrient management standard, our 5-9 standard, and perhaps looking using that as a way of addressing some of the nutritional aspects, the fertilization aspects. But I don't know it for a fact. I'm not going to have to like read the fine print on just what we have, you know, in our 5-9. But I think that particularly from environmental aspects, that there's a huge opportunity. So I look forward to reading it, having others look at it, and seeing if there's, you know, any tweaks that maybe we ought to be thinking about doing. One other opportunity that I would see is that, you know, through our Conservation Innovation Grants program a couple of years ago, we funded kind of a coordinated, regionalized approach for looking at trying to harmonize phosphorus indices across states.